You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
USAA knows dynamic duos can save the day, like superheroes and sidekicks, or auto and home insurance. With USAA, you can bundle your auto and home and save up to 10%. Tap the banner to learn more and get a quote at usaa.com/bundle. Restrictions apply.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
The world moves fast. Your workday, even faster. Pitching products, drafting reports, analyzing data. Microsoft 365 Copilot is your AI assistant for work. Built into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other Microsoft 365 apps you use. Helping you quickly write, analyze, create, and summarize. So you can cut through clutter and clear a path to your best work. Learn more at Microsoft.com/M365 Copilot.
All right, everybody. Happy Friday. And welcome to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. And I don't know if you've been listening to the news lately about this weather that we're having or going to have, or but it's been nice knowing you. Along, basically, the news has made it sound like we're all going to die and that there is a giant shortage of ice. Melter, like rock salt, across the entire country. And so, man, if half of my listener audience dies over the next couple days, man, I apologize. Like, I'm sorry. It looks like it's going to be south of where I live. We're going to get the extreme temps, but anything south of Iowa, down Missouri, across, you know, basically from Missouri, Tennessee, all the way to the ocean, even up the coast, down the coast. Like, if you're listening to this from the south, go buy a blanket. You're going to die this weekend. You know, make sure you call your loved ones and say goodbye, because this is bad. It's going to be bad. And they say that basically just about with every snowstorm in the country. So there's got to be enough rock salt. I'll actually just say this. When I lived in Alabama, I lived there for a little over a year, and it snowed for probably 40 minutes one day, and they closed down everything. They closed down schools for 2 days. They closed all restaurants and stores were closed, the entire state was like frozen. And what I mean by that was, like, not temperature-wise, because it only stayed on the ground for just a little bit. And I was just driving around thinking things would, be open, and because I'm from Iowa, and it was not. Like, I think even Walmart was closed, and they're always open. So it was crazy. So be prepared for the end, for Snowmageddon, or whatever they're calling this thing. Be safe out there. Like, it's crazy. It's just crazy out there. Okay, today, there's a couple things that I want to talk about. I want to have a little bit of a follow-up conversation about in the last episode that I put out with Rob Sand. He's a gubernatorial candidate for the state of Iowa. He's independent, and I don't want to make this about politics and him per se, but I do have some frustrations that I want to vent about the state of Iowa. And if it's happening in Iowa, I'm almost positive it's happening across other states throughout the country in regards to conservation and wildlife efforts. And then we're going to get it later in this episode. I want to get into some strategy errors that I have made throughout the course of the year or years when I've been chasing big bucks. Okay. So the first thing though, however, and I know I probably shouldn't start my episode off like this, but I want to talk a little bit about being married. I'm 45. My wife is 46. Okay. She's 1 year older than me. We have three kids. We have a very busy life, right? And so as the marriage gets longer, and as women age, I feel like the romance or the fire, let's say, that's in the marriage is heavily dictated upon the woman, right? Now her hormones change and she goes through another ultimate change, especially around my age. The kids are around a lot and, you know, maybe you're part of the problem. Maybe I'm part of the problem in why the romance is dead. But I had this idea pop in my head today, and I'm trying to figure out whether or not it's going to be a good idea. So I think you should comment wherever, you know, leave her a comment, maybe DM me about if this is a good idea or not, or maybe what has worked for you guys in the past. But, you know, I'm in a point where I want to try to spice up the marriage a little bit in the bedroom, right? And the back in the day, being extremely blunt, used to work. It used to be like, hey, let's go to the bedroom. You down for that? And you would get yeses sometimes. But those yeses seem to be getting, that method seems to be getting few and far between. So I'm at a stage in my marriage where I'm like trying to come up with creative ideas to, you know, spice some things up. And so I was thinking, like, I grew up in the peak of R&B music, where, dude, like, you put on an R&B song for a girl and some shit was going down, especially if it was descriptive, right? Get that girl in the mood and, you know, things would start to happen, right? So I have two versions of what I think I'm going to do here. My wife works from home and we play music while she's on her computer, while I'm working on my computer. I think two things. I'm going to start playing R&B music in the house, that type of R&B music that's just like, I think the people who listen to R&B music, they call it grown folk music. And so I want to play some grown folk music in our house. I also I want it to be kind of on repeat, and maybe that's going to be what I need subconsciously. She listens to that and, you know, all of the lyrics and stuff are just like going to subconsciously start getting her like in the mood. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe that'll work. The other thing is I think I might start communicating my thoughts and feelings towards her in an art, like me actually singing R&B to her. And I'll give you an example here of what I'm thinking about. Don't judge me on my singing, judge me on the content that is coming out of my mouth. So it's just like, hey girl, the kids aren't home and the laundry's done. Let's go to the bedroom, get naked and have some fun. One time, two times, maybe three. I ain't quitting till you're done. I wanna work you out. And then like, you know, in those R&B songs back in the day, they would always have this intermission between the verses where the music would play, but one of the members, usually the member with the deepest voice, would come on and basically narrate something. He wouldn't be singing, but it would be like the music would be playing and he'd be like, Damn, girl. I saw you looking fine today over there, working in your chair, making money for this family, doing what you gotta do. And I just want to say it turned me on. And here's what I'm going to do for you, baby. I got that laundry done. I emptied that dishwasher. I even got supper prepared for tonight. You ain't got to worry about a thing today, baby. But here's what I need from you right now, baby. I think maybe we should go to the bedroom. You lay down. I work out all of the kinks and stress out of your body with my hands. And then we see what happens from there. Girl, I love you, and I want to show you that I love you. And there's only one way, girl, that I know how to say thank you, and that's working it out, girl. So what do you say? Let's work it out. And then there's one guy in the R&B song who's got like the voice. He comes in. And then it just sets them off. And so I think that's a very long way of saying that I'm going to start incorporating R&B music into my marriage. And we'll just see what happens. We'll see where it goes. And so if any of you guys who are listening to this have tried this, and maybe it's worked or maybe it hasn't worked, and maybe it's a huge like red flag, like, don't do it because it actually has the opposite effect. Please let me know before I actually do it, because I don't want to dig any type of deep hole that I can't get out of. So, you know, just let me know what has worked for you guys, and we'll see what happens. You know, there'll probably be a follow up to this. All right. So, I'm sorry, guys. I apologize. Before we get into the meat and potatoes of today's episode, the what this podcast is actually about, I'm going to just send a huge shout out to the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles. And if you could do me a favor and just go visit their websites, check out their product lines, and just take a look. And if you are, you know, you get energized to go and buy something, I got a couple discount codes that I'd like to share with you. So if you are looking for, in my opinion, some of the best broadheads on the market, a majority of their heads are still manufactured in the United States, go check out wasparchery.com. I do have a discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list is Vortex Optics. Vortex has been around for years. They are by far, as far as any company that I have worked with in the past, their customer service is superior. Their products are grade A. And if you have a problem with their products, you call their customer service and they're going to educate you how to use them properly or how to fix them through their VIP warranty. And so, I mean, these guys have binoculars, rangefinders, spotting scopes, rifle scopes, red dots. So whether it's tactical or whether it is tactical or whether it's something else, go check out Vortex or hunting. What else is there? Tactical or hunting. They got optics. That's what I'm trying to say is Vortex has optics. That's a marketing. That's a marketing right there. I should call up my boys at Vortex and just be like, hey, check this out. Vortex has optics. That's their next marketing line. All right, Code Blue Scents, Code Blue, real and synthetic deer urines, scent elimination products. My favorite product that they make is the Rope-A-Dope Mock Scrape Kit. They've introduced some new SKUs and some new packages that kind of bundle a whole bunch of their products into one. So like if you are interested in creating a mock scrape, you're going to find packages that get you more than just the Rope-A-Dope Mock Scrape Kit. They have the Gravedigger scent that you throw on top of it. And this is something I really do feel has allowed me to, I don't want to say keep deer on the property, but keep deer interested on the property has been the mock scrapes that I've been setting. I pair that with a trail camera, and it really gives you an inventory of the bucks and really all deer using that mock scrape. So go check out codebluescents.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Reveal trail cameras. These guys are doing some amazing things. They have the brand new Ultra that was a huge hit. Very, very awesome functionality with that camera. And then you pair it with their mobile app, with whether it's mapping, whether it's maybe a little bit of deer predictive deer movement on there, journaling. Like, it has a whole bunch of really cool features. So, long story short, go to tacticam.com/cameras and check out Reveal Trail Cameras. All right. Last but not least, my company, fullsneakgear.com. If you want a crazy t-shirt with a deer on it, I got a deer deadlifting heavy weights. I got a turkey. Turkey season's coming up, and you should buy the Gobble Gobble Boom t-shirt. It's a badass t-shirt. I think you should have it. So go check out fullsneakgear.com. All right. Politics. Nobody likes talking about politics. Like, I've even had people message me within the last year and just be like, dude, every time there's anything about politics, he's like, I'm coming here for deer hunting talk. I'm not coming here for politics. And I'm like, that's fair enough, man. I'm not trying to do politics. I honestly don't. But when you see something crazy like what I'm about to talk about happen, especially in the state of Iowa. And if it's in the state of Iowa, if it's happening in the state of Iowa, it's got to be happening in other states too. Okay. And I feel like maybe I didn't do a good enough job asking the question to Rob Sand. I think part of it was my line of questioning, and also part of it was potentially him trying to get his bullet points out on the last episode, right? He had to make sure he covered his bases for whatever it is that he wanted to talk about, to make it worthwhile for him. And so that is what it is. But I want to be real specific here about a specific program here in Iowa that it's absolutely crazy what is happening. Okay. And I actually just found out about this through, one second here. I gotta shut my phone off. It's starting to buzz. It's really frustrating because I found this out because of, doing some research. I was trying to find, I went to AI and I told AI, hey, listen, I am getting ready to interview a candidate for governor in the state of Iowa. My podcast is an outdoor hunting themed podcast, and I'm trying to come up with a list of questions that I would like to ask him that have to do with water clarity or water cleanliness, hunting access, things like that, right? And then pops up this iWill program, and I had no clue about it. No clue about it. And this iWill program refers to this, and I'm just going to give you the description of this that I've pulled up from online. It's called Iowa's Water and Land Legacy, a voter-approved constitutional amendment to the state of Iowa from 2010 to create a permanent fund for conservation, clean water, and recreation by dedicating a small portion of the state sales tax through funding activities. Okay. Though funding activation remains a legislative challenge with ongoing debate around implementation, while iWill focuses on natural resources, Iowa has the rest of that shit doesn't matter. Okay. Here's what does matter. The purpose. And so I'm just reading what the purpose of this is: to protect water quality. Sounds like something that all people could get on board with. Conserve soil. Sounds like something that all farmers and hunters could be on board with, and anybody in the agriculture space. Enhance wildlife habitat. Boy, that sounds like something that all hunters in the state of Iowa could agree on. And then also, and increase outdoor recreation, parks, trails, even there's a little bit more there. I'll skip because I'll get to this point, here. And it says, this is the funding mechanism, a permanent fund from a dedicated portion around 3/8 of a cent of the state sales tax, which hasn't been fully implemented yet. So it hasn't been turned on Now, this is the shit that blows my fucking mind. And that is that there was a vote back in 2010. 63% of Iowans voted, yes, we want this to go down. We want this to happen. Make it happen. 63%. Okay. And that, so then I go and I look at some other stuff, right? I'm looking at how many Democrats are in this, how many Republicans are in this state, how many that are unaffiliated or third party, you know, like Iowa has a fairly big libertarian a group of people who vote libertarian. And so there's all these groups of peoples, and I'm starting to put the numbers together, and I'm just like, okay, if 63%, number one, we live in a democracy. So if 63% of people want this thing to go down, well, our representatives should vote for that thing to be implemented. It seems like a no-brainer, right? So then I'm just like, okay, well, maybe there's one party holding it up or the other, or maybe this was voted on by strictly Republicans and strictly another, you know, whatever, like one party. Not true. In order to get 63% of the votes in Iowa, there's got to be like a bipartisan. There has to be a big bipartisan. So 60, you know, a majority of that has to be, not a majority, but part of that has to be a bipartisan vote. So that tells me that there's 63% of people in the state of Iowa on both parties across all Iowans who agree this should be implemented. Okay. And so it aims to attract workers and businesses and like basically the entire economic and boosting ecotourism, which I'm guessing is hunting, fishing, the outdoors, like all hiking, camping, that kind of stuff, right? But it hasn't been turned on yet. Okay. And so other groups have been involved other than just, you know, the Iowa people. There's the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, the Iowa Environmental Council. They have pushed, along with other groups, those are just two that are at the top of the list, have pushed to get this implemented. But what do the politicians do here at the state? They can't get along. So one group decides, hey, instead of just turning this bill on and start funding for clean water, for habitat improvement across the entire state, for state parks and other recreation type things, let's add some shit to this so we can get what we want. Well, meanwhile, the other group of people, you know, like the Democrats and the Republicans can't agree on shit because one party's adding something in, then the other party starts to add something in, and then they disagree, and the bill gets watered down because there's so many other things added to it that it's now been 16 years a lack of funding for the state of Iowa. Now, this pisses me off, man. I'm invested, right? I'm a deer hunter. I'm a turkey hunter. I fish. And so the conservation, the recreation, the public lands, all of that stuff matters to me, especially the public lands in the state of Iowa. And here's why public lands are so important in the state of Iowa. Number one, we don't have any. We're 49th. We're ranked 49th in the entire country for public land access. Then we have a lack of habitat. And a lot of that has to do with farming practices. And I'm not saying I want there's a divide between farming practices and hunting. What I'm getting at is north of Interstate 80, especially northwest of Interstate 80, 35, dude, the entire state is ag fields. It's flat. It's there's no public land to hunt. And so when you have 64% of the people in the state agree to find better access, create more habitat for wildlife, to even increase, I believe some of the stuff in here has increase in public lands, maybe through a potential walk-in program or through the state actually buying land and turning it public. That was part of it. According to this, clean water, conservation, hunting access, state parks, all that shit has, because they couldn't agree to turn it on, has not generated. It could have. If they turned it on in 2010, it would have been $3 billion of funding that could have gone towards these things. And because our politics are douchebags, our politicians are douchebags, and they can't get along, and they got, fucking, you're Democrat, I can't vote for anything you stand behind. Well, you're Republican, I can't vote for anything you stand behind. We got these fucking Nimrods in Des Moines that just, this is a no-brainer. It should be a single vote. Do you want the I Will program to be implemented? Yes or no? And the politicians need to turn it on. All they have to do is vote yes. 64%. This is a democracy. 64%. So it's things like this that makes guys like me, and I'm sure other people, go, huh? What are you doing in Des Moines? Like, what are our representatives doing? If 63% of people want something and you're not giving it to them, then what are you doing? Just blows my fucking mind, dude. And I'm sorry for swearing, but, and I'm trying not to get political, but between the media, between our politicians voting just for one side all the time on some shit, and then because they don't want to support anything bipartisan if the opposite party is involved, here we are, the Iowans in this example, getting railed because our politicians can't get along. Fuck you, is what I got to say to that, right? And the other thing I want to say is, if this is happening in Iowa, I can almost guarantee you it's happening in your state. It's happening in Pennsylvania. It's happening in Wisconsin. This is permanent funding that would basically, I don't want to say fix anything, but help secure wildlife for the future for my kids, right? The state of Iowa is going in a direction right now where the land prices are through the roof, and they're going to continue to go through the roof. And everything across the entire country, hunting is leading to a rich man sport. And what I mean by that is, if you have disposable income, and I don't even want to say rich, I want to say if you are going to make the decision to spend money on X versus hunting, there's always going to be some people who are going to spend their money on hunting. Well, one thing that I've kind of realized in my life is hunting is not the biggest portion of my life. It is a lifestyle. Yes, I get it. But that lifestyle becomes threatened when hunting becomes so expensive that you're now judging whether or not you, this time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Need something important in your life or your ability to hunt. You ask any Iowan 20 years ago, we had it good, dude. We had it really good. And now things have changing, and we're at a cliff, and we're about to get pushed off that cliff to where lots of people are just going to be like, I don't want to put up with this bullshit anymore. I am going to quit hunting. And then there's the group of people who kind of also piss me off. There's hunters. They're like, well, if you really cared about it, you'd go fucking do it. You know what I care about personally is groceries, my mortgage. That's what I care about. Making sure the heat is on in my house, that kind of shit. And so if you're asking me to weigh hunting against my family, well, you know what I'm going to pick, right? I know what a majority of you are going to pick. So that's why, in my opinion, this I Will program is so important, because it helps me relax a little bit about the future for my kids. I'm literally thinking right now, in 20 years, I'm going to be 65 years old and my son is going to be 30. Where is he going to hunt in the state of Iowa? Ask that question to yourself. I want you to look at your kids.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel, because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
And just be like, where is my kid going to hunt in 20 years? And what am I doing to help that? And I am going to tell you right now that my focus in 2026 is going to be talking to as many people as humanly possible, whether they're politicians, lobbyists, or some of these Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation or the Iowa Environmental Council, all hunters. This is going to be a hill that I try to climb. And I think that it's going to be very important. It makes no sense why this shit isn't implemented yet. So I think here's the takeaway from this. I want all of you to go out and check to see if your state has something like this. Has it been voted on? Has it been implemented? And then if you're not busy enough with your life and you feel like you want to make a change, start rallying people, right? And the only way this works is when, for example, I'm thinking of the Iowa Bowhunters Association or the SCI, Iowa SCI or whatever that sportsman's, well, fuck, I forget the name of it without looking it up. We're going to have to partner with, like, find partnerships between some of these non-traditional, like the Iowa Bowhunters Association or that SEC or SIC or, well, fuck, I don't know why I don't remember it. But we're going to have to reach out to Iowa Environmental Council, the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, and we're going to have to work together and put some pressure on our elected officials to get some shit done. And then be very vocal about it. Well, here's why it's not turned on. Because you decided you wanted to add something to it. We don't want anything added to it. We want it just turned on. That's it. Let's make a stand. So go check it out. Check out your own countries, your own states. Talk with politicians. I mean, one phone call really is what it comes down to. And I think I'm going to start making some more phone calls, and I'm going to start reaching out to the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, the Iowa Environmental Council, and some of the other places on this list, and just let people know that what they're doing is stupid, right? Remember, they work for us. Anyway, I'm going to get off my soapbox now. All right. We've been recording now for 30 minutes, and I promised you guys some deer hunting talk. So now you're going to get it. So a while ago, a couple weeks ago, I released a podcast called basically What I've Learned from 30 Years of Hunting. I can't even remember the title, but it's basically 30 years of hunting. And I'm trying to figure out, like, some of the, I went through what I learned, but I don't think I was very clear on some of the biggest mistakes that I've made. And so I want to talk a little bit now about when I was going through that 10-year process of learning how to hunt mature bucks, big antlered deer, finding deer, locating the deer that are hard to find, whether it's through trail cameras, through scouting, through sign, through finding their sheds. And I'm going to repeat myself a little bit right now. And that is the, I'm going to repeat myself this way. You've heard me talk about the dots on a map theory. And that's where you print out a picture of the properties that you can hunt. And you go back in your mind and you say, okay, on this map, you take a marker and you draw a little dot here. I saw him from a tree stand here. I found his shed here. I got a trail camera picture of him here. I got a trail camera picture of him here. One day I was driving down the road and I saw him here. Okay. What you then do is you take every dot and you connect it to every dot, right? So I got that here. I'm going to draw here, draw here, draw here. Okay. Then you got to start at another dot and then you draw there. You go there, you go there, and then you got one more here, and then you got here. And long story short, what it does is it creates a shape over top of this map. Okay. Oh, I gotta forget that one right here, and it creates a shape. Okay. Then what I do is I've identified his home range. That's his core area. It's this weird shape, and I'm sure this buck goes outside of this shape on more than one occasion, but this is the data that I have on this particular big buck. And so now within that, I am looking for terrain features. And then I go in there and I scout it and I find it, right? Okay. So that's where I'm starting is the trail camera pictures, all that stuff. Here's what I have learned over the course of once I've kind of identified where these deer are located and me trying to make a move in. Number one, take it easy. And what I mean by that is there's times to get aggressive. If you don't know, if you know a core area, but you don't know a specific bedding ridge or a bedding area, or you don't necessarily have any historic data of deer movement on that particular property, take it easy, dude. Slowly work your way in. And maybe it's over the course of 2 days, or maybe it's you go in the morning hunt and you watch deer movement in the morning hunt, then you tear down. And I'm talking from a mobile standpoint right now, because this is how I learned this was being ultra mobile. You go into a spot, you watch the afternoon movement. Okay. Afternoon movement shows something. Okay. I'm going to creep into where I saw that deer movement the night before, or if anything, I'm going to tear down. Maybe that night I might work my way in 50 yards to where the deer movement was that I didn't get access to, or maybe I saw something. I saw the shooter that I was after, but it was too far. I'm then shifting my stand closer to that location. You got to watch the wind direction, obviously. Got to kind of understand thermals a little bit, obviously, but you made that move in, you have a good access route out, and then you come back in the next day. The biggest mistakes that I have made throughout my 10 years of learning bow hunting from 2006 to 2016 was going in too far to places that I was not that familiar with. And deer just got downwind to me all the time. Maybe they knew I was there from like the noise of setting up and I didn't realize that they were there, but I would go in and I would set up, I would walk down a ridge. This is the example that I have. I would walk down a ridge. I would be looking for sign. I would find a trail, but up ahead I would see a rub and I'd be like, damn, that looks better than this spot. And so I would go there. And then there maybe wouldn't be a suitable tree for me. And maybe it was too small or there was another tree, but it was just way off. And then my scent wouldn't be right. So then I would turn around and I'd come back to spot one. I don't know how many times I had been busted for ground scent by just standing there and looking around. Now, when it comes to ground scent on my access route in, I don't really care too much. But anything past the point of where you set up, like if you're taking a big loop and I'm walking down this ridge, I say, hey, nothing's good here. I'm going to back up over this other trail. It just didn't work out for me. I used to get busted a lot doing that. And so I had to slow play a lot of my run and guns unless I knew for a fact that I was going into a really good bedding area or a badass staging area. And I had my access route planned right. I would go in, set up, boom, perfect. But when I didn't have 100% of the data, I mean, you still got to hunt. You're not going to rely on just trail cameras and scouting. You still have to go in there and at that specific time of year, try to figure out what the natural deer movement is on that property or that terrain feature. And so I learned to slow play certain things. And usually what I do is I'm lucky enough to where I have had the ability to hunt in October in the past and kind of creep into some of these areas where I would sit at the staging area first. And then I would see deer movement across the ridge. Maybe it would go across the ridge and drop down on the opposite side of the ridge where I wasn't. And eventually what it would do, it would lead me to a point. And in that point, there was always a tree, right? And whether that it was, you know, I don't know, like I'm trying to explain the deer movement. It was along that motion, along that deer movement, someplace there's a tree. There's always been a tree. And for some of the guys who find that and there's no trees, ground hunt, hunting blind. Saddle hunters can probably get in some smaller trees than some tree stand guys. I'm not saying that's all the time, but you know, as far as me being mobile, I've always been able to kind of locate that point. I sit at an edge. I watch the deer movement. And you just keep going. Or maybe like some sign breaks out on the ridge. You're hunting a specific stand and you see a giant rub appear once the leaves start to fall off the tree or something like that. And then I would work my way in. Before I learned that, dude, I was getting destroyed by deer. I was getting caught. My wind would swirl all the time because I was just in the wrong spot. And I would walk in, then walk out. Walk in, walk out, or, you know, like, well, second guess. The thing I should have done was however far you go in, don't ever back up. Unless, I don't want to say don't ever do that, but that's what's gotten me in trouble is I would go in because the ridge would be the right ridge. And then I would back out. I'd go in 100 yards and then back up 40. And I would get busted a lot. Because of that, whether that was scent in the air or they caught something they didn't like. And I'm guessing it was me going in, or I went in too far, made some noise. They saw me or smelled me or something like that. And then they just didn't come in. So I'm just destroying my hunts before I ever got to them, got to sit on them. So That saved a lot of big bucks for me. Mistake number two, and this is rookie mistake. This is young Dan Johnson mistake. I have called at so many deer that knew I was there, thinking that these deer were so stupid, they were going to just waltz right in. Whether that is they've seen you move, or they've caught your scent. Or maybe you're moving in the tree stand, another deer sees you, they blow, or like a doe blows, or they throw their tail up and run away. Do not call at those deer. And I don't want to make a blanket statement here because I'm not a blanket statement guy, but do not ever call at a spooked whitetail buck. They will not come in. I have never, ever called in a whitetail buck that has been spooked or has stomped his foot or his head bobbing or anything like that. It has never happened in my 30 years of deer hunting. It's never happened. So what I'm getting at is don't call. This is basic. Don't call at a spooked whitetail. I have footage, and maybe I'll put it up on the Nine Finger Chronicles YouTube channel, of me calling like this giant 180 10-pointer is walking right to me. And he hits some swirling wind or something. I think my scent cone shifted a little bit through thermals, and he hits hard. Like he's walking at a good pace, then instantly breaks, puts his head up. And what does my dumbass do? My dumbass just starts calling at him, grunts at him, snort wheezes at him, even rattles at him. And it's in the rut. So he's somewhat interested, so he keeps looking back. He keeps looking back. Then he'll walk away a little bit. Then he'll look back and he's not seeing anything. He just smells me. He was smelling me for probably a nanosecond or whatever it is. And I called that fucker out of the county. I just kept calling him. I'm just like, bap, bap, rattle, rattle, rat, rat. And he just out of my life forever. I saw him the previous night. I saw him walk in the direction. I knew I had a stand in that area. I went and I set it up. Dude, just horse shit. And that cost me one of the most beautiful whitetail bucks I've ever seen. And to be honest with you, I think he was a 3-year-old. Just an absolute freak of nature whitetail buck. And so that was probably around 2008. Or something like that, 2007, 8, 9, somewhere around that time. I'll have to try to find that footage. And so that's another big thing is I used to call way too much. And I had more encounters with deer, right? I think I've told you guys all the stories. I've told you guys that it wasn't until I started hunting off field edges I saw less deer, but I had more deer within shooting range, right? And so back in the day when I thought I needed to see 25 deer to have a good night instead of having 3 deer within shooting range, I was calling all the time. Oh, there's a buck 500, 600, 700 yards away. Let's rattle at him and see what happens. Rattle, rattle. He probably couldn't even hear it. Or he was chasing a doe. And to this day, here's another fact. I saw a buck chasing a doe once and I called at him one time. My entire hunting career, I have pulled one buck off a doe. So statistically, it's not worth calling at a buck who's chasing a doe even. Maybe throw a grunt if you can hear it. But 90% of the time, all you're doing is alerting other deer that you're not focused on that's coming downwind of you and they're busting you 400, 500 yards downwind and you never see them. You don't know about them, that kind of stuff. So it wasn't until I really cut back on calling that I started having encounters with really good deer. And when I did see a buck, I started observing their body language. And really from a grunting standpoint, it's just a, that's it. And that gets them fired up enough to turn around and come in to investigate. There's a lot of things that have to go right when you're trying to call a deer in. And number one is you have to be in a thick enough area or the deer, like if they're close, if they're like at 70, 80 yards, all they have to do is turn their head and just observe for a moment. If they don't see anything, the likelihood of them coming in is very low. So I started hunting in thicker areas and rattling. Like if I rattled at a buck that I saw, I had to start making sure that the terrain was blocking the noise or I was thick enough to where the vegetation was blocking. So they had to come investigate if they were curious, not in a wide open area where they could put their head up. Like I can just remember rattling on field edges and a buck would step out 200 yards away and I'd be like, oh, shooter, rattle at him. He just looks and he can see that there's no deer there. So why does he have to come in after me? He'd come in. He doesn't, right? A lot of those things led to me hunting the strategies that I've hunted in the past. So, that's another big one. Long story short, don't overcall, especially in highly pressured areas. You got to focus on getting close to them first and calling them second. Everybody I've talked to, whether it's me, in my experience in heavy pressured properties, or the guys that I've talked to in Michigan or Pennsylvania who are always hunting with other people on their farms, they're trying to get close to them first and then a subtle call to kind of get them in, right? The blind rattling on heavily pressured public lands is not going to get you the results. Like if I could tell you one thing, maybe try leaving your rattling antlers in the truck for a couple. And if you're seeing deer, but you feel like you need a call to get them closer, you're in the wrong spot. That's my take on it. So
we're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, Galaxy rewinding, what is the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds. For whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Man, I am all for an awesome hunting community. All right. I'm all for it. I'm all for being able to talk to people about hunting, you know, especially people locally. I wish it was different. I truly wish it was different. But when I started sharing information with other hunters, either on the farm or locally, I very rarely do it now. I do it, but very rarely do I talk about anything I've ever saw. Even if it's a gigantic whitetail, like from 2017, 18, and 19, I chased this behemoth, non-typical freak. At his peak, he was 210-ish inches, like just a fucking giant dude, one that gets you hard. You know what I mean? And I kept him quiet. I didn't talk to anybody about him. And then one year he just disappeared. Rumor has it, the rumor mill in that area was that he got poached, and that nobody, like, he got poached in the area, or that there was a out-of-stater spotlighting one night that came through. Talking to a farmer. That was a handful of years after that buck disappeared. I said, "Hey, did you ever happen to see that buck?" And they're like, "Yeah, I saw him on the road, or I saw him in the field. But then I heard a shot one night, and then I didn't see him anymore." I'm like, "Okay, well, that might have something to do with it. Or, you know, somebody else is using a weapon during a season that they shouldn't be using," or whatever the case is. And you start to, whether it was the rumor mill or whether it was another hunter just shot him and kept him quiet. This was a North American whitetail, cover of a North American whitetail type deer, caliber deer. And so back in the day, I would talk to people about that kind of stuff. And then you would have like This was back in the day when I learned, when I just kind of learned, if you don't know them, don't talk to them about it. Like, unless they're really good friends. Like, I can remember back in the day getting a trail camera picture, having it on my phone or on a laptop, running into a random person that maybe I knew or maybe I didn't know that well, you know, another hunter on a proper, a neighboring property or whatever. And I'd be like, hey, dude, have you seen this buck? And they're like, no, I haven't. That's a giant, dude. I'm like, yeah, I had him at 70 yards last night, this and that. And then the next thing you know, that person has gained access to that farm. And now you're competing again with that kind of stuff. And so it just sounds almost horrible to say, but I just don't share that information with anybody anymore unless I have the land locked up. If I have the land locked up and it's only permission for me and my family or me and gun hunters or something like that, then I'm not sharing any of it, right? So I don't know if you can read into that at all, but just know that if you're following me on Instagram, I'm probably not sharing the biggest deer that I have on camera. So, and the reason for that is because these days, if you're sharing a 200-inch deer on a loosely held property or on public land, or whether it's 200 inches or just big for that particular area, people will find out where you hunt. They will look your name up. They will find out where you live. Dude, I've heard every story imaginable. I've heard people following people to public land. They parked out in front of their house, follow them to public land, were driving around looking for their particular truck, finding it, then going in and starting to hunt that area as well. Blows my mind. So just be kind of careful what you're sharing, because it could potentially just open the door for unwanted people in your areas, especially if you have a honey hole. If you have a honey hole that you've been hunting for 15 years, 20 years, like, you shouldn't be sharing shit. Maybe a picture of that deer and saying, hey, look, you know, I had a great season. But any details about where you hunt should just be, especially if you're a public land hunter, right? I mean, you guys know I go to South Dakota, but you don't know where in South Dakota I go. And so there's a lot of public land in South Dakota. And so that's why I don't give a ton of detail to where I go hunting in South Dakota. Yeah, I post the pictures and stuff like that, but that entire state looks the same. So good luck trying to figure out where I hunt. But the point of that is, if you're after one specific deer, dude, keep it quiet. Just keep it quiet. If you're on a piece of, like, I used to hunt on a piece of property. It's since been sold. And I believe I've talked about this before. It was such an unassuming place. It was a road, and then you could see the back fence, but up through this rectangular 90 acres, I called it the 90. That's where I had all the encounters with shipwreck throughout the years. All of that led up to a road, and nobody hunted it because there was a business across the road from it, as well as you could almost see through the property up into the next property, and nobody was interested in it. And it held a ton of deer, and it held giant deer. The first year I hunted it, I saw on that property, and to the south of that property, I found that year in total was seven deer. On that property, I saw with my own eyes seven deer, 170 and over. And one of them was the 200 inch. Actually, I take that back. The first year I hunted it, shipwreck was 170 as probably a 3 year old. And 3 or 4 year old. And then I saw four other deer north of 170. It was the biggest honey hole I ever found. So I didn't say shit about it. And so it was because it was a very unassuming, nobody hunted it because of that. And I knocked on the guy's door who owned it. And I said, hey, do you mind if I hunt your property? He's like, yeah, yeah, you can hunt it. He would have let anybody hunt it. And eventually, people saw my truck. They got permission and started hunting it. But luckily, after that, it started getting sold. It sold multiple times, and I no longer had access to it. And so that's a very long way of saying, hey, listen, man, if you got a good spot, don't tell anybody about it, right? It's unfortunate because, I mean, even people like, hey, man, like, I'm kind of looking for a place to take my kid. I've heard this. Yeah, you know what? It's probably the right thing to do. Take a kid hunting. So I've heard guys take their buddy's kid hunting. Next thing you know, that guy is there when you pull into the driveway and he's like, oh yeah, I got permission to hunt it too now. And you're like, well, that sucks. And say what you want about ethics and things like that. There are some unwritten rules that buddies just don't do. Like I've had some scenarios where I could have easily, just because I knew the guy, I could have easily went into a spot and said, hey, I want access to this farm. And my buddy already had permission to it. I stayed away from it. That's because that's the right thing to do. And so just know that it's unfortunate, but it's important. I mean, especially if you're chasing big deer, like big deer have a way of showing up, people knowing about it, and then crazy shit. I mean, just look at all the poaching that has gone on giant deer and rule breaking that has gone on throughout the course of the last, I mean, some of the biggest bucks that I've seen, like, I don't know, I forget the guy's name, but I think it happened in Ohio. He said he shot it 2 miles or 3 miles away. He had it on trail camera, but he jumped multiple properties to get to it, poached it, all that shit. So long story short, be careful who you talk to about big deer. If you're trying to kill big deer, hey, it sucks to say, but you know, is what it is. Okay. That would be thing number two. And then as far as some of the other biggest things, like one of my biggest regrets as far as killing big bucks is I went through a stage in my life where I didn't act like I've been there before because I had never been there before. So I went almost instantly into trying to chase down big bucks from 1994. I'm just going to say 1994. I was 14 till 2006 when I was 26. How do I put this? Yeah. 1994 to 2006. I had no idea really what I was doing. I was just going out there. I wasn't educating myself at all. I just had the experiences that I had. That's it. And then, I started paying attention in 2006, but in 2006, I started going after big deer, but I had never shot deer before. And so this is a simple one. If you're starting out, even today, I still don't think I shoot enough deer. I shot my buck this year, standing at 19 yards, no big deal, but he was 125-inch 8-pointer. Okay. Not the biggest buck I've ever shot, not the oldest buck I've ever shot. But I'll tell you this, when you have a 125-inch, you know, run of the mill buck in front of you, and what I mean by that is in my area. Okay. If you have a 125-inch buck and you've been hunting for 20 years for big bucks, you've passed I've passed a lot of 125-inch deer, but the moment that 150, 160, you know, my biggest experience on a big F up was, 2010 when I had that shipwreck buck and he was 210 inches at 22 yards, and I blacked out because of buck fever. And I think a lot of it had to do with I hadn't been shooting a lot of does at that period of my life. And so I'm telling, if you want to get good at shooting deer, you have to shoot deer. And you have to practice a lot for that muscle memory. And for me, I'm lucky because a lot of my, am I the best archer? Absolutely not. I will admit that I'm not the best archer. I'm good at killing deer because I'm good at getting close to deer. I'm good at getting close to deer. And so I'm trying to figure out how to get as close to them so I don't need to take a 20, 30, 40, 50 yard shot. I want them 20 and in. That's how I set up my tree stands. I'm trying to get them close. And so how do you get good at shooting deer? Start shooting deer. Dude, I have shanked shots. I mean, even last year, I shanked a shot. Some of that was not necessarily a deer shooting, the amount of deer that I shot. I can tell you that in 2010, when Shipwreck popped out, the previous year, I had not shot the previous seasons. 5 years leading up to that, I did not shoot enough deer, does included. And when you go to try to jump up from that, just shooting does to shooting,
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
Like you're going after deer that are in the 170s that are very rare, and you finally get an opportunity, and you very rarely draw back on a buck, a buck at all, or a doe. You don't know what you're doing. I screwed up so many times and got buck fever so bad that I'd be shaking, I'd black out, I'd forget to have my anchor point set, and I would throw an arrow, and it would just be like, where was I even aiming? Just horse shit. And so in order to get comfortable around big bucks, you got to be comfortable around shooting deer, because you can be really good. And here's where I was really good. I feel I was really good at getting really close to a lot of deer. And I passed a lot of deer I should have shot over the course of the years. I look back and it's the biggest, to this day, I think one of the biggest mistakes. So that when that 170 plus deer did show up, I would lose control and I wouldn't focus and I'd black out. But that's because I'd never shot a 150 or even a 140 in some of those scenarios, right? I was passing deer I should have shot. So if I could give advice, and you don't have to take it, but if you're looking to be really good at shooting giant bucks, what I would do is first get really good at shooting deer. Because there's a difference. And the more deer you shoot, the better you become at shooting deer, whether they have 170 inches of antler on their head or 90 or none at all. And so if you're new and you're listening to this, go through a it's brown, it's down phase for maybe 2-3 years, then start stair-stepping your way up. That helped me. But I will say that going after big deer and passing a lot of does helped me learn helped me learn deer behavior, body, body language, I can remember I watched a 150 inch. I passed him, right? 150 inch, biggest deer probably I've ever passed since then. 150 inch 10 pointer, 4 year old. And that's around the time I was chasing a couple other really big deer that, right, two or three of them that year that were north of 170. And I just watched him. If I would have shot this deer, I would have never seen some of the stuff that I've seen of mature deer doing mature deer things at a very close range. So I got to watch him rub a tree, show his dominance to other little bucks. I got to see him react to does that were not in heat. And this was like this might have been a late October, early November, like within that 5 day window of like the 28th, 29th of October to the 1st and 2nd of November. And I got to watch how he used his nose to scent check does, and he knew that they were not ready. Meanwhile, the 2 and the 3 year olds were out bugging these does that were not receptive yet. This buck stayed in the timber. I never would have been able to pass him if I was on a field edge, by the way. I was in the timber, in the staging area, passed him, watched him come up, make sign, scent check the does that were in the field because it was blowing down him. He knew that the does that were out there were not receptive, so he laid a scrape, and then he went in a different direction looking for does that were. And that, my friends, is the difference between a mature buck and a young deer, you know, a 2 year old versus a 4 year old. Okay. And the older these deer get, the better that they become of not having to expose themselves to breed. Now, when it is time to breed, they're going just like all the other deer are. They don't have to fight. They just step out, put their ears back, bristle up. That deer knows not to mess with them, and then it's on. But there's portions of time where, like, these bucks just know. And so, do I regret that pass? Maybe a little bit, but I learned something from that. I learned something from that encounter. And that was one of those encounters where it's just like, okay, I'm probably not even seeing some of these bucks that are living here because they don't even need to come out of the thick stuff. They don't even need to expose themselves. They can just get downwind where these deer are at, and then, oh, there's no does here. I'm going to stay eating acorns. I don't need to necessarily go out into the field. I'm going to cruise around looking for more does to try to find that first hot one. And that's what they're doing. They don't need to expose themselves. So those are just a couple of the biggest, I would say those are what we've talked about today, are the biggest mistakes that I have made, but ultimately I've learned the most from. Okay. So then I guess the other one would always be like, always have a backup release in your truck or something, like, you know, gear related stuff. But from a strategy, those errors were some of my biggest errors throughout the course of the last 20-ish years of hunting. So take away from that what you want, right? What are the takeaways today? Obviously the strategies that we just got done talking about, but also the I Will program that I talked about here in the state of Iowa. Maybe do a little research if you have any free time about what's going on in your state as far as conservation efforts and how they're being funded, and if there's a permanent change to the, what was the term here? Let me pull that up one more time. Okay. Permanent funding. Dedicated sales tax, a permanent from declared portion of sales tax implemented. Well, there's a term that I'm looking for. But just check it out yourself. Okay. Because I feel like there's probably some politicians that are getting in the way through funding conservation because they're adding in other bullshit into these bills that are preventing that from happening. So take a look at that. Take a look at that. Oh, constitutional change in the state. That's what I was looking for. Constitutional change. All right. So I want everybody to go out. Season's over in Iowa, so I'm not even thinking about deer hunting at this point. I'm more concerned for trying to get my oldest son out shed hunting before I have to have my knee surgery in March. So with that said, go check out Wasp, go check out Vortex, Code Blue Sense, Reveal trail cameras, full sneak gear. Thank you very much for taking time out of your day to listen to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. First and foremost, I really appreciate that. Second, go to Apple Podcasts, go to Spotify, wherever you download the Nine Finger Chronicles. Do me a favor, please. Leave a 5-star review. Let everybody know that this is the best show in the entire galaxy. And then also go subscribe. Do me a favor. Go subscribe to the Nine Finger Chronicles, the How to Hunt Deer podcast, the How to Hunt Turkey podcast on YouTube. Go subscribe. I'm trying to unlock some features that I get when that happens. So good vibes, everybody. Wear your safety harness. If you're still hunting, be safe. Good luck. Fill the freezer. Hug your wife, slap her on the butt, and we will talk to you next time. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.